Ian and Jonathan McPhee, Property Maintenance Saloon. Aloha, it's 4 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea Kauai Community Radio, and this show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with McPhee Property Maintenance Solutions.
Ian and Jonathan McPhee, Property Maintenance Solutions, providing Kauai's North Shore a chemical and pesticide-free alternative. Ian and Jonathan McPhee. Both proud supporters of KKCR. 651-5412.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. Okay, it's 4 o'clock. It's time now for Out of the Box, Closet Free Radio, and Answer to the New World Order. I'm your host, Dave Giroux, and I'm in the studio here with Jonathan Jay.
That would be me. There we are.
Your mic there.
Okay.
Okay.
Howdy.
We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll be talking with the author of the book KPD Blue, which is a book about the Kauai Police Department and the county government as well. And we've got Anthony Summers on the phone, and we'll be talking with him for the entire hour and a half. We're hoping to get some callers in here, so we want to talk to him here for probably about 15, 20 minutes, and then hopefully by about 4:20 or so, we'll be allowing some calls. And excuse us if we have some technical difficulties, because we're having trouble with the phone lines here, and it's a little tricky when you get somebody calling in and you know, somebody else trying to talk with them. But we're going to go, let's see, let's try and get make sure we've got Tony on the line here. Tony, are you there?
Hit twice.
Tony, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, can you hear me all right then?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, but let me just read kind of the liner notes from your book here before we get started. And for those who haven't read the book, this talks about a 10-year political war for the control of the Kauai Police Department. It can be traced back to one single incident, the lap dance of May 1995. On one side, two reform police chiefs trying to make KPD more professional, modern, and diverse. Opposing them, a cabal of entrenched middle managers clinging to the KPD's longtime reputation as a gang of thugs in blue with no respect for the law. In 1995, a KPD sting operation busted a prostitution ring. KPD detectives transported the woman back to headquarters, took one into the watch sergeant's office, and closed the door. They took off her clothes, fondled her, and photographed her. Police supervisors looked the other way, and that was just the beginning. If you think banana republics, crooked cops, corrupt politicians, and unethical government bureaucrats exist only in the third world, welcome to Kauai, 100 miles west of and 100 years behind the rest of the U.S.
That's not really painting too pretty a picture.
Pretty strong statement there. Tony, then, so let's see. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what, you know, where you got the information and kind of why you wrote the book and what did you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, what I wanted to do was tell a story that had only been told in lots of little pieces. I'll give you a little bit of background. If I get too windy, cut me off, please.
Okay.
I had been a a newspaper reporter here in Phoenix, Arizona, where I live now, for about 25 years, and I covered mostly state government. I covered six governors, the courts, two mayors, politics and government mainly. And the newspaper that I worked for went out of business. And at the time, and this was in the mid-90s, I was dating a woman on Maui who was a marine biologist, and we decided to try to go into business together. We were both scuba instructors, and she had already established a business as a dive guide and a tour guide, and we tried that for a while, and that wasn't working.
I think you're kind of swimming a little far afield. Maybe we can get back to the book.
Okay, well, I'm getting there. Anyway, I'm trying to get myself on Kauai.
All right,
so I moved. I started looking to get back into journalism. The Garden Island, which is always hiring because nobody ever stays there. It's so truly awful.
Well, and the pay, you know, the pay is good too.
Yeah, the pay is awful. I mean, it's you know, there's lots of bad things about it. Anyway, I decided to get back into journalism and stay in Hawaii. So they were always hiring. I took a job there. I worked there for about 14 months. And then I went to work as the Kauai correspondent for the Star Bulletin, and that's what got me on Kauai. And I was there for as a reporter for 8 years. When I retired and I got back here, and I started looking around, I said, "Well, I want to try to write a book. I'd never written anything that long, and this was kind of a natural. I had all these clips and notes and most of the research done already. All I had to do was put it back together in a different form. So that's where the book came from."
Okay, so you were on Kauai, living here for 8 years, or you were coming and going from Honolulu then? Or?
No, I was living there. I lived in Princeville, and my office was in Lihue.
So this was your beat?
Yeah, I was the entire bureau, and I took out the trash. So I was the Star Bulletin's guy in Kauai. Now they don't have one. I guess they closed the bureau, and Tom Finnegan, who was my replacement,
a very nice guy.
Yeah, awful nice guy. Is I don't know if he's still on the island or not. I hope so. Nice guy.
Okay. Well, let's see. What we want to do then, I guess, is talk about some of the stuff in your book here that relates to the Kauai Police Department and corruption in the local government. Then at some point in time, we want to talk about some solutions to some of these problems. I mean, we identify that, yes, we've got a problem, then what can be done about it, or what sort of structural changes need to be made to kind of avoid these things in the future.
Yeah, because otherwise we're just complainers.
Right, yeah. And so, with the original lap dance incident, and we don't need to get into a lot of salacious details or anything like that, but one of the big things that is stuck out there, and people think, oh, it's just a harmless little activity or whatever. It doesn't really show any
problem thinks with that? The way. Who thinks that?
But that was a straw man kind of thing,
Oh, okay. Nobody thinks that.
But the thing is, having sexual contact with somebody in your custody is a felony in every situation, in the law. If you're in police or you're in the jail of any type, or anytime you're in custody
except on Kauai at that time.
In 1996.
Yeah.
Except in Kauai? I mean, even other counties?
Well, according to Judge Masuoka, and he may have been right. He said the law that existed at that time applied to sexually touching only by a prison guard. This was a case where somebody was being detained at a police station by a police officer.
Yeah, but they weren't corrections officers.
And that's
so
just kind of
no,
a loophole.
And Judge Masuoka made that distinction and said, well, we can't charge him with that. So they did charge the one individual with destroying, because he had shredded the photographs with destroying evidence, but they couldn't bring the sex charge against the officers, according to the judge.
Now, the quote from him on page 12 of your book is, "It should not be permitted, and it should be a felony, whether with or without consent," he said. "This conduct should not be accepted or tolerated in our community." But then, where was the accountability ultimately?
Well, the accountability was with the police chief, and that's why I use this lap dancer incident. Partly because it hopefully draws some readers into the book, unless they're totally grossed out by all that stuff. But partly because it touched almost all the main characters of the book. They were involved to some degree with that incident, but also it highlighted what is the major thesis of the book, that here were these police chiefs, George Freitas and then after him Casey Lum, who had been hired by the police commission specifically to bring diversity to the police department, to make it a more ethical, law-abiding police force, and here this big incident comes up. The police chief fires a bunch of these guys, and the union, of course, comes running in to save them.
This is SHOPO, is that right? The Hawaiian SHOPO. Police Officers Guild.
Yeah. And it goes to an arbitrator who, it just happens to turn out, is an attorney there on Kauai who deals with the administration all the time because he represents major developers. He ends up being the arbitrator in it. He said, well, it wasn't really their fault. I mean, their superiors knew or should have known what they were up to, and so we can't hold these officers accountable.
Yeah, but then the superiors weren't held accountable either.
No, and nobody was.
But isn't that kind of incredible that the police officers weren't aware of the law when their job is to enforce the law?
Oh, of course. I mean, they're not that dumb.
And then something else, which is kind of a reoccurring theme to the way I read your book. And by the way, just for purposes of this interview, Dave is going to be the good cop, and I will be the bad cop.
Okay, fine.
Sure. But to me, it seems like what you have here is a failure of accountability and no mechanism for self-correct. You know, because like something bad happened, and then it didn't get fixed. And that's sort of the theme of everything that I read in the book, is the it didn't get fixed part.
Yeah, I think I think what's important in all of this, when I first moved there and first started covering county government, I thought, well, you know, they do a lot of stuff wrong. But it's a matter of being naive. I mean, this is an isolated little place without much touch with the rest of the world, and sometimes, you just have to give them a few points for not being as sophisticated as maybe they are on Maui or Oahu.
Yeah, you're not going to make any friends by saying stuff like that right now. Just to let you know.
That's fine.
Right.
Yeah, people are pretty...
But that was my initial impression, and then I realized later, after I'd been there for a while, that these folks, I mean, county officials, the mayor, the council, they know exactly what they're doing. And they know they can get away with it because nobody can challenge them on it. The press doesn't do it. The state doesn't do it. The state attorney general's office, the feds, nobody does it.
The county council covers for them. The county attorney covers for them. Judges cover for them.
Yeah, and the judge, at least at that time, he's retired now. And I don't. The two new judges that are there now, they kind of arrived about the time I was leaving, so I really don't have any opinion on them.
Yeah, we've got a new police chief now too, who is hired as a reformer to help clean up the department.
Yeah, except he was the guy that they wanted, being the
insiders or whatever.
The insiders at the old guard at the police department.
Well, they got their
and
way.
The mayor and
since he left, they got their way.
And yeah, and I know that. I don't know Chief Perry. I've never talked to him. I purposely ended the book at the time that Chief Lum left. I didn't try to. There are a few incidents at the end that, as I said in the book, that really came from press reports where cops got in trouble. But as far as the new chief himself, I really have nothing to say one way or the other. One of the reasons I used the police department, there were a lot of things I looked at that I could have gone after. But
do you think there's something in the water here that makes people extra corrupt or rapacious?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I do. It's
because I'd love to know what you think that is.
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff. There's the whole notion of the separate kingdom, and people really believe that, and they believe that they're not held accountable, that they don't really belong to the state of Hawaii. A lot of the things that happened here should have been investigated by either the state attorney general's office, or by the FBI, which has a public corruption mission. They weren't. I don't know why, but they weren't. They certainly were aware of a lot of this stuff.
The FBI was actually out here a couple of years ago investigating KPD. I don't know what the details were.
They take off and you never hear about them again. So they just kind of sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, and I still read the papers there, and I read several blogs and stuff like that. Just I really did consider Kauai my home for the 8 years that I lived there. It wasn't a matter of me just coming in there without any attachment to the place and then leaving. But I also knew that would be my terminal assignment, as we call it in the Army, before I retired. And once I retired, I couldn't afford to stay on Kauai because I made little enough money when I was working there, but to try to live there off a reporter's pension just is not possible.
Right. So, hey, Tony, I want to talk about a couple of incidents referring to the police department, just so we kind of establish the patterns that are going on here. One of the things that fell out from the Monica Alvis incident was that, and she was the lap dancer there, was the county was sued and paid a $250,000 out-of-court settlement. And then that's a common theme here. They never want to see, you know, this testimony come out in public trial.
Absolutely.
They always just pay off the defendant or the plaintiff and give them some money and make it go away. You know, and that
but,
is
But whose
pattern,
money
you know.
Is that?
It's our tax money.
It's the taxpayers' money. And what's even more ridiculous is if you follow these kids, and this is, by the way, again, why I use the police department is there were all these lawsuits. Any of the other departments that I would have loved to write about, the planning department,
Public Works.
there's no public record. I mean, the way the government works there, I would have to take them to court on every document. I can't afford that.
Right.
The newspapers won't do it.
Well, because the newspapers need to have continued access to these folks so they can write their stories into the future, and you can't be making problems with the people that you're trying to make your business model on.
Sure you can.
Well, it's challenging. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it. I'm just saying that's the way the real world works.
Well, yeah, and
that's the way it's not supposed to work, but that's the way it's working.
It is supposed to be a confrontational arrangement.
Yeah, the fourth estate of government.
It's a checks and balances kind of thing, and.
But it's a mechanism of accountability that's either absent or not functioning properly.
Well, but the reporter, if he's doing his job or her job, it goes and finds out what's really going on. I mean, I'll give you a good example because I did read the Garden Island today. Paul Curtis is back on the staff, by golly, and he has this what we call in the business a BJ piece, and you can figure out for yourself what BJ stands for. Falling all over himself, saying how wonderful Chief Perry is and this great plan that he has for the future, and even throws in a little pigeon quoting the chief, and this is typical Paul. He's not going to write anything that's going to annoy the police chief because he is now the new police reporter. Well, yeah.
So you're calling him a sycophant. Is that, am I hearing that correctly?
And I've known Paul a long time, and that's his style. He's not confrontational. He likes to fit in. He likes it when people come up and hug him. He is not a reporter in my book. And if he doesn't hold the cops to account, who's going to do it? They did have a reporter on the police beat there that was, you know, a little more. Curious about things. I just saw that piece today, and I said, "Oh no."
Yeah. Okay, there's one incident, or a couple here. I want to go over quickly. Then you tell us about Mark Begley. Okay, he was a police officer who saw what he thought was corruption going on. People were officers were confiscating drugs from offenders and not turning it in as evidence. Mm-hmm. And he saw kind of a pattern of that sort of thing going on. He wrote a scathing complaint to the police department. He said that all members of the KPD vice squad were part of a criminal organization or had promised to ignore it.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that case there, then.
Well, that was a lawsuit, and again, that's why I stuck with the police department, because the lawsuits were there.
A matter of getting the record?
Yeah, otherwise, there's, you know, What you do when you're an investigative reporter is the place you go for everything is the public record, except on Kauai there is no public record, but we'll get to that later. Bailey was a police officer that filed a lawsuit accusing the vice squad of being a member of organized crime, that they were taking drugs away from suspects. They threatened to murder one person. He went out drinking with a bunch of them, kind of a choir practice in Joseph Wambaugh terms. And supposedly they beat him up. There's some dispute over that. But he did suffer some permanent injuries. Apparently he has tendonitis, his ears ring and all that.
He had to be airlifted to Honolulu.
Oh yeah, yeah, he had brain damage and all that stuff. Yeah, but here's this guy that says all these horrible things about the department in the lawsuit. It finally, after years, it goes to a federal magistrate. This was a federal lawsuit, and the magistrate throws it out, says there's no evidence of all this stuff. Then Bailey suddenly becomes the golden boy. I don't understand this, and this happened again after I left. But he became their recruiting poster child. I mean, now, at least the last time I looked, he's a deputy chief.
I think he's the number two man there. Yeah.
What? You know, how did this is a guy
big turnaround
that says the department is full of crooks and now he's the number two guy.
Well, it's pretty curious. Obviously, there's information there that we're clearly not privy to.
No.
But one of the things, kind of moving towards the rest of your book, one of the things that, as a reader, is very frustrating to me is you make numerous assertions about things, but then where are the footnotes? You know, am I just supposed to trust you that, oh yeah, Anthony's got the goods on this one. Help me out here, because as a reader, some of the claims you make are hard to swallow, and you don't substantiate them.
Yeah, I do.
Where?
Everything in the text of the book. I mean, it's the same thing as a news story. You read a news story, there's no footnotes. You attribute what you're saying to whoever said it or whatever document it came from. And if you look, I mean, show me a fact in there that's not attributed, and let's go look it up.
Well, you say it in general. You know, at the end, you say, "Oh, this call comes from public records," that sort of thing, or federal trial transcripts, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. So you don't specifically point out particular items. You just lump it all together toward the end, I think.
Well, that was, yeah. But when you go back to the individual allegations, because again, these were taken start right with the beginning, right on page one, the lap dancer. And this all came from the trial of, where I found this, was actually in an appeals court document that stated in great detail what went on during the lap dancing incident. And it makes it rather clear in there that this testimony that I'm quoting from the two undercover officers from Hawaii Police Department that were working over there, they all said this. It's in the court record.
Well, that in the beginning, it's clear that's where this is from. But and I don't think this is the most egregious one, but you're talking about when Marianne Kisaka first goes into office, and you say the first thing that she does after she takes her oath is start selling jewelry. Now, that's kind of a weird thing for her to do, and you don't footnote that, you don't cite that, you don't attribute that to anyone, and that's just one tiny, tiny example. But there's numerous things in here where you make a claim, and then you don't back it up with some kind of evidence, and then it's difficult for the reader to decide, well, is this reasonable or not? And it certainly is the case that there's a lot of people who are mentioned by name in the book who take great offense at the things that you wrote about them, which maybe they're true or maybe they're not, but they're certainly arguing that what you're saying is not true. And as a reader, because you don't cite a lot of evidence, it's difficult to weigh for myself.
Well, there were numerous people in the mayor's office that confirmed that to me, starting with Beth Tokioka and working your way on down.
Well, I'm not saying that didn't happen. I'm just saying you don't show how that did or didn't
happen. Give me some other examples.
Well, we can talk about that as we go.
I'll find some more about Dave Grills.
Yeah. There's another incident here. Darla Abaciello.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A woman police officer reported a drug dealer was working in Southside, and she was told to back off. The informant said that the officers were paid $6,000 to leave him alone. She filed a complaint. They threatened to kill her. She sued, got $1 million.
Yep.
What you have any more details on that case and what that means and what that shows here about the police department?
Well, it shows a lot. But first of all, I mean, the source for all of that were the pleadings in her lawsuit. Okay, I mean, I didn't pull that stuff out of thin air. And, you know, this book was published 8 months ago now. I've yet to have anybody write me, call me up, and my number is listed. You can find me in the Phoenix phone directory and say, that isn't true. Nobody has said that. And frankly, everything in this book, it was all printed before in the newspaper. Nobody ever went to the newspaper and said, I want a correction, I want a retraction. There is very little in this book that hasn't been in print before.
Right.
And nobody came forward and said, this is wrong. Okay, and they haven't since the book, at least to me.
Yeah.
And I'm the one to complain to because I'm the one that can fix it for them. And one of the nice things about a digital book is that it can be changed at any time.
Now, there's you document a lot of different cases. You know, Lisa Fisher, officer who was repeatedly sexual harassed by her boss in Hanalei, filed a complaint that was never investigated.
Right.
She sued, got $425,000. I think we're already up to $2 million here, and we've just gotten started here. And
all that came from her lawsuit.
Well, you know, I'm not questioning every point in there.
I mean, okay.
It's not well attributed. I'll agree, but you know, to me it sounds believable. And you know, and if it's up to you to prove, you know, that it's. I mean, it's up to me to prove that it's not true, and I don't have any evidence that it's not. So.
Okay.
But one case that I, and we have a call here we're going to go to in just a minute, but there's one case that I want to talk about briefly, and this was very important when I first moved here, the serial killer on the south side there,
mm-hmm.
the west side. Can you talk about that case for a minute?
And, sure.
And what that means?
You can read it a number of ways, and I kind of left that open, but this was a case of a lot of things going wrong. The crime scenes in every case, but the responding officers did such a lousy job of securing the crime scenes that they virtually destroyed any evidence. So
just bludgeon it.
They stomped all over it. They were, you know, they destroyed any footprints. You know, they picked stuff up, they touched stuff. I used to be a police supervisor. You know, your cops don't do that.
Right. Well, just to let our listeners know, this was in 2000. Three white women were sexually assaulted and stabbed. Two of them died. The other was so severely injured it took her hours to crawl a few feet to the phone.
Right.
And the case has never been solved.
It kind of has never been solved.
Well, I mean, at the time,
nobody's ever been charged
or arrested on, you know. But there was a suspect that they think it was, who was a brother of a police officer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he had been a police officer, and he left KPD, and the last I heard of him, he was a DOCARE officer. I don't know; he may have retired by now.
Okay, so this shows that, you know, the police kind of, you know, seems to take care of their own, but they have no training in murder investigations. They don't know how to secure a crime scene. They don't know how to gather evidence.
Right.
And they don't go through training in that. I mean, they do their own in-house training, and you call it the blind leading the blind, but they don't, you know, they don't get specific training in how to do a murder investigation, and they botched this one, evidently. They could not gather the evidence.
Well, and what they did in subsequent murders, they didn't even go near the crime scene. You know, they set up a roadblock, and they waited until a forensics team from Honolulu Police Department could fly over and process the crime scene, which, you know, that would have been smart in the serial killer cases as well, but they didn't know any better. Well, they at least learned that lesson.
Where did you get the name of the person that you reported?
We knew that. It was originally... let me see if I can... He was reported as a parole violator, and the only one that used his name, and this was an argument I had over and over again, all of us reporters did with our editors, they didn't want to use his name. Well, one TV station used it, the county, mainly Beth Tokioka, who was the at that time the press secretary to the mayor, which meant the press secretary to the police department, said jumped up and down and said, "Oh no, this, he's not a suspect. He's just a parole violator, and you drew the wrong conclusion." And you know what? He was the suspect. He always was. And he finally, ultimately, as I said in the book, he sued the newspaper
for defamation.
For defamation, and he lost the lawsuit. And what was happening was, because they couldn't get any evidence to charge him, they picked him up on some really chicken shit parole violations and kept throwing him back in prison. And he'd get out and he'd violate parole again. He'd see some woman he wasn't supposed to see here. Some terms of his parole, drove a car that he wasn't supposed to drive. They'd throw him back in prison again. Now, he's maxed out now. He's out. He's
Yeah, I looked him up and he's out. He's living on Oahu.
Yeah.
But he's on the sex offender database, so you can track him. Hey, we got a phone call. Let's go to the phones here.
Okay.
And see what our callers are want to hear about.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? This is Mel Raposo calling.
Oh, hey, Mel.
How's it going?
Good.
Thanks for doing this. I think it's a good thing to get Mr. Summer, give him the opportunity to express how he came about doing the book. I will tell you that it became clear a little while ago when he said that when he came to Kauai, you know, he found this to be a little isolated place with little touch with the rest of the world. And, you know, that explains, I think, why it came about. I got to tell you, when Mr. Summer was a reporter here, I had a lot of respect for him. In fact,
Tony, are you there still? Can you hear?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I just want to make sure our phones are
working. Mel and I, true, we used to be very friendly.
Yeah, and I guess the problem I have with the book is I show up quite a bit in the book. I'm actually in chapter one, chapter two, and I think I have a whole chapter dedicated to myself. But
yeah,
not
tell
once,
Gunner Mill.
Yeah, not once did Mr. Summer ever speak to me about what occurred. And I got to say that I know he made a comment earlier about the arbitrators in this case being all from Kauai, and I will tell you that my arbitrator was not from Kauai. We had an arbitrator specifically chosen from Honolulu to prevent that kind of allegation that Mr. Sommer just talked about.
The other thing, if I may,
I just want to state my comments, and then I'll hang up, and then he can say whatever he wants. But
okay.
The bottom line is that book portrays and the question I have is, where is his source? Yes, he got it from a court record from a plaintiff, and that's fine and dandy, but, you know, a plaintiff can say whatever they want. A true reporter, a good reporter, investigative journalist, as he calls himself, should have taken that extra step. And if you would have, and this was an ongoing invitation on behalf of me back in those days when the case went through, back when I first ran for office in 1998, I volunteered to open up my files to anyone. Any of my files would have been open. Arbitrator's report, investigative, internal investigation, which clearly would have shown you, Mr. Summer, that Mel Raposo was not present that night. But in your book, you chose to take the low road. You chose to insist and infer that Mel was in there. Although you didn't participate, you sat and watched and laughed while the other officers fondled this prisoner. You know for a fact, Mr. Summer, that's not true. You chose not to print the truth. You chose to print the falsehood when you could have clearly verified that, but you went that way because you wanted to make the book a little bit more juicy so more people bought your book, and I congratulate you. You've mission accomplished. But I will tell you something, Mr. Sommer, and I'm so glad that you don't live in Hawaii anymore, because that's so un-Hawaii what you did. You came here for 8 years, and you worked here, and you did a service to this community, and now wanted to make the quick buck. So you went ahead and on the families of so many people, my friend, let me tell you, Mr. Machado has a widow and a son. I have two children that's got to deal with that book in school. And you know for a fact that damn book is fake, is false, that what you said about Mariposa, simply untrue. You can tell the emotion. I've never spoken on this issue. My political advisors advised me to do a press conference. No, clear the air. I said it's not worth it because it's so false and phony. But you, Mr. Sommer, decided to continue the myth, even though you knew. And if you can sit here on this radio today and tell me your source that validates the fact that Mel Raposo was in that room when that nonsense happened, I will swallow, I will eat your book.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mel. Well, thank you very much for sending. So let's let Tony respond to that.
Yeah, Mel, that's 245 pages. Yeah.
Pulp, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
You gotta love this small island.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I understand Mel is upset. And again, this comes from we're coming. Am I still connected to you?
Yeah, you're okay. Loud and clear.
You know, I come from a little different world. You guys aren't used to reporters who do investigating, and where all that stuff came from. First of all, the arbitrator. Now, he wasn't the arbitrator in all the cases, but the one who's quoted in court documents was Max Graham. Okay, and that, you know, I've got the documents. I can show them to you. I don't know who any of the other arbitrators were, but he was the one that ordered at least most of these guys put back to work. Secondly, all the stuff that was said about Mel being in the room and when Monica Alves was fondled, this wasn't Tony Sommer making this stuff up. This was what Monica Alves told the court. Okay, this was her testimony. It's all on videotape. What's interesting is that nobody, and this is where the press falls down, both on Kauai and in Hawaii.
I'd like to actually congratulate you for taking some of that rap right there.
It's
not often that reporters actually complain about the press doing a lousy job, so I'd like to commend you for that, point.
That's, to me, one of the, and when we get to the end, but what needs to be fixed, one of the things that needs to be fixed there is the press. But Georgia Mossman sat through that whole trial. She never, you could see her on the videotape coming and going. She was the police reporter, police and courts reporter at that time for the Garden Island. She never wrote any of the stuff. I don't know why she was sitting there, because she never wrote any of it. All these allegations were made about Mel. The defendant in the case was Randy Machado. And nobody refuted any of it. I mean, this was in a trial. This was, you know, before Judge Masuoka. Nobody said that didn't happen. There were no witnesses to say that didn't happen. And that's the way the book read. I mean, as far as asking Mel about a lot of this stuff, I did many times. I mean, a lot of that asking didn't go on while I was writing the book. It went on while I was there as a reporter covering these stories on a daily basis. And he wouldn't discuss the stuff. You talk to him, and he'd turn around and walk away. The arrogance is just unbelievable, not just the Mel, but county officials in general.
Right.
It's kind of a screw-you sort of attitude. But this stuff is all in the court record, and it's all stuff that was testified to. There was no testimony that disputed anything that was said by Monica Alves. That's where all that came from. Now, as far as, you know, it upsets some families, well, I'm sorry if it upsets Randy Machado's family. But again, this is public record. This actually happened, and he should have thought about his family when he did that, but he didn't. Now, I know that a couple of years ago, one of the activists there on the island, I won't use his name, but you all know who he is, was going to put that videotape on Hawaii and show it to the whole island, and everybody said, oh, no, his family, his children, and all that. And so he backed off.
Well, Andy Parks backed down from something?
No, this was Ed Call.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Ed.
so don't use names.
Don't use his name.
Okay. Tony, we want to kind of move on a little bit. We're you know, halfway through the show now. We got a lot of things to cover, and so
I told you we'd fill up the hour and a half.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No danger of that not happening.
Yeah, we might have to have you back on again. But okay. But you know, besides what's going on in the police department, we've gone over several instances here, and it all comes down to lawsuits, the county paying out tons of money,
but no trials.
No trials.
Went to trial.
Right, and then. Or if it does go to trial, Matsuoka just throws it out or rules in favor of the county.
Yeah.
And so, you know, behind the KPD, that we have the county providing cover.
Yeah, the courts should be, you know, another mechanism of accountability, but
not
working.
This is, I kept telling the activists this, because this is the situation where I'm used to working in, is the activist groups, whether it's the Sierra Club, or Common Cause, or whoever, especially the newspapers who don't do it there. The one public records case that I was involved in, my newspaper wouldn't hire me a lawyer. I couldn't believe that. When I worked here in Phoenix, I didn't have to ask my boss. We had a law firm on retainer. I'd call him up. The lawyer was standing by my side in 20 minutes. But that is not the way it's done. And what I tell them and what I truly believe is that when you're dealing with the government and they won't give you the information you want and you're pretty sure it's public record, then you got to take them into court and bloody their nose every once in a while.
Right, yeah. And that's not happening. And I think, you know, papers are losing a lot of their power now because they're losing their readership and their...
And their pulp.
And their money and their pulp. And so
physically smaller.
They don't have the resources they do now to...
And there's no competition on the island either, so...
File these lawsuits. But then, you know, one of the ways that the government kind of provided the cover was through the Board of Ethics. And they were just in the newspaper this week here.
Yes, they were.
You know, where you say most governments have an independent Board of Ethics with their own legal staff to be able to investigate what the county officials are up to and make sure it's all being done above board. We don't have that here, do we?
No, you don't. And the way it works here, or it did when I was there, and I don't think it's changed very much. The attorney for the Board of Ethics was the same attorney, was one of the deputy county attorneys. And at that time, it was the same deputy county attorney that was the legal advisor to the council. All the staffing for the Board of Ethics is done by the mayor's office. So if you file a complaint against a public official, you have to send it to the mayor's office. They open the complaint there. Now, and I can't, maybe they just give it to the chairman of the Board of Ethics and nobody in the mayor's office ever sees it. But
I think Jimmy Pfluger gets a copy of it, though.
Jimmy Pfluger probably gets a copy. Actually, I always got along real well with Jimmy. They have the opportunity, they being the mayor's office and staff, to cover forever whoever it is you're blaming before the Board of Ethics even sees it. That group is really a joke, and it hasn't gotten any better. And
well, it doesn't seem like, from how you're describing it, that the independence is necessary for them to be truly an arbitrator of ethical violations.
Oh,
it doesn't
no.
seem to exist.
The one time it had some validity, I think the chairman of it, when I first came there, he was the priest of the Episcopal Church. I'm trying to remember his name. And he was a very straight shooter. But that was a long time ago.
And then you said in 2007, the state legislature tried to, you know, pass a bill to
yes.
require the counties to have an independent Board of Ethics, and Brian Baptiste, lobbied Lingle to veto it, which she did, and then lobbied the legislature not to override it, which they did.
Right.
And so we're stuck with, you know, the weak Board of Ethics that we've
had. Yeah, and nobody has, as far as I know, has tried that bill again.
Yeah. Hey, let's go to the phones. We have a call.
Okay.
So, caller, if you can keep it brief, and we'll take your answer off the air.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, my name is Nate.
Hello.
Hi there. I had an experience with the police department.
If you could make it brief, then then proceed, please.
Okay. About 6 weeks ago, my car was involved with a hit and run accident, and the person fled the scene. And I was able to gather evidence, and the police officer was involved, took a vacation for a month, and assigned no one to help me. And everyone I talked to said I had to talk to this officer, including one officer who told me that to him it wasn't a crime when my car got totaled in the parking lot. And 5 weeks later, when I did talk to the investigating officer, he told me that there was no follow-up that he would do, even though I proved the car that hit me with another officer. And he told me I needed to follow up with the original. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's happened. I've heard a couple of instances like that where the police, for whatever reason, are slow to respond, slow to file reports. Happened to my wife. Somebody backed into her car. There's a witness. We had a license plate number. It took her months to get the police just to file a simple report.
Well, people who've read the books can see the story in there about the lady whose horse was killed when was attacked by these dogs. You know?
Right.
And they waited months and months and months to there was one witness. She left the island. They sent her a driver's license photo months later, and she couldn't make a positive ID off of it. And everybody on the North Shore knew who the owner of those dogs was. Everybody, including me, and it was a local guy. That's the kind of stuff that the credibility. I mean, the police chief, whether it's Perry or anybody else, can sit down and make nice with Paul Curtis or any other reporter, but you got to know that when cops aren't doing their jobs, that something happens. Now, he has created, Perry, apparently, from what I read in the paper today, has created an internal affairs division, two guys, and they're the ones that should be looking at that. That's the whole idea of a civilian police commission, is if somebody just dropped this guy's case for a month because he went on vacation, there's something real wrong with that, and that's what the police commission is supposed to do. But the people that are on these boards and commissions are all cronies of the mayor.
Yeah, well, there was an incident about maybe 6 months ago or so where one private citizen had some suggestions for how the police department could improve itself, and the chief of police responded with a lot of bristling. And then the head of the police commission actually, rather than intervene and try and facilitate, you know, a helpful discussion, he actually barked down this guy's throat and called him all of these different names in the books and basically told him to shut up in the newspaper.
In the newspaper, yeah.
Yeah, which was sort of funny if you think things like that are funny.
It was very unprofessional.
Extraordinarily unprofessional.
Well, then where's the, as we started this whole conversation, where's the accountability? And there isn't any.
You know, I talked to some of the other police commissioners, and privately on the phone, they agreed with me that Mr. Iannucci was out of line, and not only was he out of line and unprofessional, but that he wasn't speaking on behalf of the police commission. He was just speaking as, those are his personal opinions. But that's, you know, it still said police commissioner chief.
Sure, yeah.
At the end of the article. So, the accountability part, I don't know.
This is how these boards and commissions, and not just the police commission, but the county council and the planning commission and the board of ethics, they do everything behind closed doors. They meet with their attorney, and then they do all kinds of stuff that the attorney doesn't even need to be there for, but that's their cover. And so you can't read the minutes. You can't see what they did. And so you have no idea, particularly with police officers, has a police officer on that island ever been punished for anything? Suspended, fired.
There were a couple police officers who went to Maui recently who yep. were supposed to attend yep. A convention or a meeting, and instead they went golfing.
They got drunk for a couple of days.
And it was a pretty obvious mistake on their part, and they got nailed for that. It's my understanding that they were getting that was some payback for something that they had done earlier that they couldn't get pinned for.
Well, what I'm trying to I know the something happened to them, but I don't recall what.
Well, they were suspended, and I believe they were fired.
I don't remember.
But this was like they were made an example out of because they were supposed to go to this convention and they didn't go to the convention. They went.
There's
and they
actually
had,
some drug enforcement training.
Yeah, and then and they went golfing instead. And yeah. so it was an embarrassing and egregious, obvious violation of what they're supposed to do. And so they got nailed.
Yeah. Hey, we got another call. Let's go to the phones.
I think that's the exception rather than the rule, though.
Oh, yeah.
We got a caller on the air here?
Yes.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, there you are.
Great, thanks. Credit to the persons in the studio for putting on the show. It seems like a very high-quality program.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Oh, it's been really good. Well, do you think that you might archive it, possibly, on your website?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're making a tape of it, so we'll try and post that.
Okay, fantastic. Here's my question.
If you could be brief, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you're going to praise us some more, then you can go on for a while.
I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just kidding. Seriously, we're running right tight on time, so please go ahead.
Give credit where it's due. If the guest could rank the current or past police force on 1 to 10, 1 being the worst police operations in the U.S. and 10 being about as good as they can realistically get, where were we on that scale, 1 to 10 in the past, and where is it right now in his estimation? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's actually a question. And because for what I say, I do have to throw in some caveats, and I think you'll find these caveats are also in the book.
You'll notice that he didn't say 10 to 0.
No. I would say, it just varies so much because if we're talking about the middle management at KPD, they're awful. They are stuck in the past. I name names in the book. Go buy the book if you want to know the names.
But this is an old boy network, just to sort of generalize.
The good old boy network, the assistant chiefs and lieutenants the guys that all opposed Freitas and then opposed Lum and opposed any change and all supported Perry when he applied for the job and were very happy when he got it. It was interesting when Chief Lum was sworn in and I was there, not a single one of those middle management guys were at the ceremony. There were a lot of patrolmen and sergeants, but none of the middle management was there.
That's a pretty blunt snub.
Yeah, it was. And Chief Lum had spent his entire career at the KPD. He just wasn't born on Kauai, which is, he didn't go to Kapaa High School.
He went to college, too. No, Lum didn't. It seems like you don't benefit by getting more education there.
No. And that's one of the many problems in Kauai. So if we're just talking about the middle management there, they're pretty awful. I would give them a 2 or a 3. When you have a guy who's now an assistant chief, and I didn't put his name in the book because I couldn't prove it, but I know who it was. When a dog has fatally injured a little boy, and he gets a call on the radio, and the dispatcher says, "You better get up there," and he says, "Nah, it's just some friggin' Holly kid. There's no hurry." I know who that was, but I can't prove it, so I didn't put it in the book. But he's an assistant chief right now. That is totally unacceptable.
Right.
And then the chief runs down and grabs the tape to that conversation, which is why I couldn't prove it, and says, "Oh, this is evidence," and nobody's ever been able to get it. That's how they cover for each other. And it's now as far as the patrolmen go, kind of a mixed bag. They really need some more training. They need a little better supervision. And again, I spent quite a few years, 28 years, both on 5 years on active duty and 23 years in the reserve as a military police officer, so I know a little bit about police training and supervision, and most of them, though, want to do a good job. And actually, quite a few of the detectives are very good. Some are, some aren't. Overall, if you're getting out of the working class cop, the person that your citizen who makes a criminal complaint is going to deal with, I'd say they're about average.
Okay, hey, we have another phone call. Let's go to the...
Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha. Hey. If you could make your question brief, please. Thank you.
Can,
go ahead.
Can he hear me on the other end?
Yes.
Yeah, hey. Mr. Somers, this is Mr. Pa, Kikani Pa.
Kikani, how are you?
How are you, buddy?
Good.
In a while.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to see if you could also add in the situation on the boating issue, which was also illegal, and wondering if you was willing to write a book about that because, you know, the way the enforcement went down with us, standing up for, you know, for what we did on pushing the issue with the boating issues was the lack of enforcement from the police department that also came through the same chain that you're talking about with the ethics and what and so because of economics. So
just as a point of clarification, are you talking about the boating, the issue over boating out of Honolulu?
In Honolulu Bay.
Yes, okay. Yes, because, you know, when I did my research, it was that in order to the captains to be certified, they needed to come out of a designated harbor. Honolulu was a river. It's not a harbor. So the bottom line here was, you know, the way the situation escalated and the way the enforcement came down, yeah, you know, we were the bad people, but there, you know, when you filed a complaint, somebody in the higher up office, like you said, somewhere the paper gets lost.
Connie, I'm sure you're aware that one of Mayor Kusaka's nearest, dearest girlfriends, they ran a boating company that operated out of Honolulu.
Yeah, the thing we're talking about, I'd like you to really write something, you know, because, I mean, I'm just saying it's up to you because I know the history of that. I know the history of what's happening in Hawaii. And there is good cops out there. Don't get me wrong. But there's some places when something goes bad, the government covers up. So, like, you guys were sharing earlier about these officers went to Honolulu or Maui that they're supposed to go do a training.
Yeah.
And they never went. And so they were suspended and then they got terminated. Well, I would think if somebody was doing something more severe and breaking the law, that should have been applied to. But something as minor as that, they kind of looked far to it so that they can say, hey, guys, look, we're doing our job.
Well, it was that. My understanding is, and I don't have all of the scuttlebutt on this, but my understanding is that those cops, they had done some other stuff, like they were bad cops or whatever, but they couldn't pin it on them. They couldn't nail them for it. And so they took this opportunity to bust them for something that was obvious that they had done incorrect, even though it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah,
it's kind of like paybacks.
Right. So I just wanted to say, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to pick up the book. And where can I get it from, Mr. Somers?
I believe they're selling it at Borders.
Okay, right on. Well, nice hearing from you. It's been a while. And if you could touch base on a little bit of media coverage where we're doing the Planning Commission, and you personally told me that you're trying to put in things, and the editor is saying we can't allow this. Maybe you could share some of that on also. And I want to thank KKCR and you, and nice hearing from you.
Okay. Take care.
Well, thank you,
caller.
We have another caller?
Do you want to respond to that? Write a book about the Honolulu voting issue.
It's mentioned in passing in this book. It's one of those things where there's no public. They had that hearing that lasted for like 18 hours. That Connie spoke at several times, but the public record on it is largely missing. And to try to recreate that, really everything in that book is now, it doesn't mean it absolutely positively happened, but somebody said on the record in a court case that it happened, and nobody ever refuted it. And I know at the time when I did those stories that I went to whoever was being accused and said, what's your response? And, you know, the typical, because the county attorney would tell them what to say, was they'd have a couple of answers. One was that, well, it's under litigation, so I can't talk about it. Or my attorneys told me not to talk about it.
Okay, Tony, just for a second. We need to cut in for a minute and let our listeners know that you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. And a portion of this program is brought to you by Rico Business Solutions, Pacific Tile, and Monaco's.
Rico Business Solutions, sales and service on Kauai. Digital, black and white, and color systems, complete with copy, print, scan, and fax from networks or standalone PCs. Rico Business Solutions, 246-9531, formerly Lanier Worldwide.
Pacific Tile, offering creative ideas on tile and stone with knowledgeable consultants located at Lihue at 245-1765 or on the web at pacific-tile.com.
Monaco's Taqueria, authentic Mexican cuisine. Cujillo Highway in Wailua, open 7 days a week. Lunch, 11 a.m. to 3